All right, welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today we're going to be diving deep into something that I think a lot of people find pretty interesting, crime scenes, investigations. But more specifically, we're going to be looking at this from a Fourth Amendment perspective and how the Supreme Court has kind of weighed in on some of this stuff.
Yeah, I think it's something that we see on TV and in movies all the time, right? These big crime scene investigations. But it's really interesting to think about, what are the actual rules that govern police behavior in those situations, and how do they balance the need to solve crimes with protecting people's constitutional rights? And that's really what this case, Flippo v. West Virginia, gets into.
And he gets pretty specific too. So Flippo v. West Virginia, 1999 Supreme Court case. We've got a lot of material here that we're going to go over, and I think this is going to be really fascinating for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And this case really is a foundational one for understanding the Fourth Amendment in the context of crime scenes.
So let's set the scene a little bit here. We're going back to 1996, and we have James Michael Flippo and his wife. They're on vacation. They're at a cabin in West Virginia. And then one evening, Flippo calls 911. He reports that he and his wife have been attacked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so police arrive. They find Flippo outside. He's injured. And when they go inside the cabin, they find his wife, and she's deceased. She's got fatal head wounds. So obviously, right away, this becomes a homicide investigation.
Yeah, that's a very serious situation. And you can imagine in a situation like that, the police want to do everything they can to find out what happened and bring the person responsible to justice, right?
Absolutely. But here's where it gets really interesting. And this is why this case ended up going all the way to the Supreme Court. Over the next 16 hours, police officers conduct this like pretty extensive warrantless search of the cabin. They're taking photographs, documenting the scene, collecting evidence, all that stuff that you'd kind of expect in a crime scene situation.
Right, the standard procedure.
Yeah. But during this search, they find a closed briefcase. It's just sitting there on a table. And they decide to open it. And inside, they find some photographs and negatives, some of which were, how do we say this, somewhat sensitive photos of Flippo's friend.
Interesting. So I'm already starting to see how this might lead to a legal issue. On the one hand, you have this very serious crime that the police are investigating, a homicide. But then on the other hand, you have them opening up a closed briefcase, something that seems like it should have an expectation of privacy.
Right, exactly. And that briefcase, that closed container, that's really at the heart of why this murder investigation became a landmark Fourth Amendment case.
It raises this fundamental question of how far can law enforcement go when they're investigating a crime? Where do we draw the line between their need to gather evidence and our right to privacy?
Yeah, and you would think, a homicide, this is a terrible crime. Police need to do their job. They need to get in there and find answers. But why did the Supreme Court even take this on? What was so significant about this particular search?
Well, I think the main issue here is that the police conducted this really thorough search, including opening that closed briefcase without getting a warrant. And the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution protects us against unreasonable searches and seizures, and usually requires that police get a warrant based on probable cause before conducting a search. So the question here is, does the seriousness of the crime somehow override that requirement? Does it create the sort of general exception to the Fourth Amendment?
So that's what we're going to unpack today, right? We're going to really dive into Flippo v. West Virginia and try to figure out where those boundaries of police power are, especially when they're searching a crime scene without a warrant.
Exactly. And we're going to see why that 16-hour search and the opening of that closed briefcase, those things became such a crucial issue in terms of Fourth Amendment law.
And I mean, this stuff is important for everyone, but I think especially, for anyone who's interested in the law, interested in criminal justice, it's essential knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. Understanding how the Fourth Amendment applies in these types of situations can have real-world implications. So, before we talk about the Supreme Court's decision, let's back up a little bit. How did this case even make its way up to the highest court in the land?
Well, it's interesting, it starts with Flippo. His legal team argues that the evidence that they found in that briefcase shouldn't be allowed in court. They say it's inadmissible because the search was a violation of his Fourth Amendment rights, right? They didn't have a warrant.
Makes sense. That's a pretty standard argument in these types of cases. And what did the trial court say?
They weren't persuaded. Basically, they said that because it was a crime scene, the police have the authority to thoroughly investigate, like, anything and everything at the scene.
So they're essentially saying that the crime itself, the fact that it was a homicide, creates this kind of blanket exception to the warrant requirement.
That's how it seems, yeah.
Yeah.
They called it a homicide crime scene exception.
Hmm. That's interesting. But as you can imagine, that's a pretty broad interpretation of police power, right? And it could potentially lead to some pretty significant intrusions into personal privacy without any real judicial oversight. So what happened next? Did they appeal that decision?
They did, but the West Virginia Supreme Court, they actually denied review, so they didn't even hear the case.
Wow. So for Flippo, that meant the only option left was to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. That's a pretty big deal.
Yes, it is.
So by the time it gets to the Supreme Court, this case is really raising some major constitutional questions. They have to figure out, can a lower court just create a whole new exception to the Fourth Amendment, this, you know, homicide crime scene exception, just because they think it makes sense in that situation? And does that mean the police can search literally anything they want at a murder scene without needing a warrant, including things like closed containers where people have a reasonable expectation of privacy?
Yeah, I mean, that brings up a really interesting point, right? We already have some very well-established exceptions to the Fourth Amendment. Like, if there's an immediate threat to someone's safety, or if evidence is in plain view. But is it okay for courts to just invent new exceptions whenever they feel like it?
Right. That's a really key point. It gets at the heart of how we interpret and apply the Constitution. Because remember, the Fourth Amendment generally says that the police need a warrant issued by a judge based on probable cause before they can search someone or their property. And probable cause means they have to have a reasonable belief that a crime's been committed or that they're going to find evidence of a crime in a particular place. And the idea behind that is to protect people from unreasonable searches.
To have some kind of neutral party, a judge, review the situation and make sure the police aren't just going on fishing expeditions, right?
Exactly. And those existing exceptions to the warrant requirement, those are supposed to be really narrow and specific based on these very well-established situations. They're not supposed to be this, like, general free pass to search whenever the police feel like it's justified.
Okay, so the Supreme Court agrees to hear the case. What happened? What was their decision?
Well, the court was unanimous in its decision. They said that there is no such thing as a general homicide crime scene exception to the Fourth Amendment's warrant requirement. They were very clear about that.
So no matter how serious the crime is, even a homicide, the police can't just automatically search everything without a warrant.
Right. And they actually relied on a previous case that they decided back in 1978 called Mincy v. Arizona.
Okay, what happened in Mincy?
So in Mincy, there was a shooting in an apartment, and the police ended up conducting this huge 4-day warrantless search of the entire place. And the Supreme Court in that case also said, nope, that's not okay. There's no blanket murder scene exception to the warrant requirement. So even way back then, they were already establishing this principle that the severity of the crime alone doesn't give the police the power to disregard the Fourth Amendment.
So even though Flippo happened over 20 years after Mincy, the court was basically saying, we've already addressed this issue and our position hasn't changed.
Exactly. They were emphasizing that there's a reason why we have this warrant requirement and it's not something to be taken lightly.
Okay, so if there's no general exception for crime scenes, what are the police allowed to do in a situation like this? I mean, they obviously can't just stand around and wait for a warrant while a crime scene is, you know, potentially being contaminated or evidence is being lost.
Yeah, right. And the Supreme Court acknowledged that. They said, look, the police absolutely can enter a place without a warrant if they have a reasonable belief that someone inside needs immediate help. Like maybe there are other victims who are injured or if there's an ongoing threat. And they can also do a quick search of the area to make sure it's safe for them to be there, to see if there's a suspect still lurking around, that kind of thing.
So basic safety measures, making sure everyone's okay, that makes sense.
Right. But the court was very clear that those exceptions are very limited. They're just for those very immediate needs. Once the scene is secure and there's no longer an active threat, they can't just keep searching without a warrant. And this is especially true for more invasive searches, like opening up closed containers.
And that goes back to the briefcase in Flippo, right?
Absolutely. The court specifically said that opening that briefcase long after the scene was secured and Flippo was already in the hospital was a clear violation of his Fourth Amendment rights. And they actually referenced something called the closed container doctrine when they were talking about this.
So what is that? Closed container doctrine.
So it basically says that we have a stronger expectation of privacy when it comes to things that are closed up and not in plain view. Things like luggage, briefcases, even our cars to a certain extent. The idea is that by putting stuff in a closed container, we're showing that we want to keep those things private. So the police can't just open them up without a warrant, especially hours after they first got to the scene.
That's like an extra layer of privacy protection, right? We're taking that extra step to keep those things hidden, so there should be a higher bar for the police to search them.
Right. And this principle isn't just about physical containers. It also applies to our private information and thoughts, like things that are password protected on our phones or computers. The idea is that those things deserve a higher level of protection from government intrusion.
So just because something's in a crime scene, it doesn't mean the police can automatically search through every closed container they find.
Exactly. The court was very clear that those privacy protections still apply even in the context of a crime scene.
Interesting. You know, I was also wondering about something else I read about this case. The state, West Virginia, tried to argue that because Flippo called 911, he was essentially consenting to the search, like he was inviting them in and giving them permission to look around.
Yeah, that was one of their arguments. They said that his call for help implied consent for that whole, hours-long search. But the Supreme Court didn't buy it.
Really?
Nope. They said that consent to a search has to be much more clear than that. It can't just be assumed from the fact that someone called for help in an emergency.
That makes sense. Otherwise, anytime anyone called the police, they'd be risking giving up all of their privacy rights just by asking for assistance.
Exactly. It would set a really dangerous precedent. Imagine you call the police because someone broke into your house, and suddenly they have the right to search every single thing in your house without a warrant. That's not what the Fourth Amendment is about.
So to sum it up, in Flippo v. West Virginia, the Supreme Court basically said that the police can't just conduct these massive warrantless searches at crime scenes, even if it's a serious crime like a homicide.
Exactly. They emphasize that the Fourth Amendment still applies. And they reinforce the idea that those exceptions to the warrant requirement are supposed to be very specific and limited.
And it's not just about protecting people's stuff, right? It's also about protecting our privacy, our sense of security in our own homes, and with our personal belongings.
Right. It's about recognizing that we have a right to privacy even when the police are investigating a crime.
So this case is obviously really important for law enforcement, right? It sets some pretty clear guidelines about what they can and can't do at a crime scene. But why should the average person, someone who's not a lawyer or a police officer, care about Flippo?
Because it's about protecting all of our rights. Flippo shows that the Constitution is there to protect us, even in difficult situations, even when a serious crime has been committed. It says that the police can't just do whatever they want, whenever they want. They have to follow the rules, they have to respect our rights, and if they don't, there are consequences.
So it's a reminder that we do have rights and those rights matter.
Exactly. And it's a reminder that the courts are there to enforce those rights, even when it's difficult, even when it might seem like the police have a good reason to bend the rules.
So thinking about what you just said, you know, about the courts being there to enforce our rights, it makes me wonder about something. The court in Flippo was unanimous in its decision, right?
Yeah, all nine justices agreed.
So they were all on the same page about this, about protecting those Fourth Amendment rights at crime scenes. But do you think there are still challenges when it comes to balancing the need for effective law enforcement with protecting those individual liberties? Like, are there situations where it's not so clear-cut, where those two things might be in tension?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about it. The world is changing so quickly, technology is evolving constantly, and the ways that crimes are committed are evolving too. And that means the law has to adapt. It has to figure out how to apply these constitutional principles to new situations, new technologies, and that's not always easy.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it's not like Flippo settled everything. There's still ongoing debates and discussions about how to apply those Fourth Amendment protections in a way that makes sense, that's fair and just.
Right. And I think that's something that we all need to be thinking about, as citizens, as people who are impacted by the law. How do we make sure that the police have the tools they need to do their jobs effectively to keep us safe, while also making sure that our rights are protected, that we're not subjected to these unreasonable searches and seizures? It's a really tough question, and there's no easy answer.
Yeah, it's definitely something to think about. So for everyone listening, I mean, I think that's a good takeaway from this deep dive. Flippo v. West Virginia is a really important case. It sets some clear boundaries for police conduct at crime scenes, but it also raises these broader questions about how we balance law enforcement with individual rights, and that's something that's still relevant today, something we all need to be engaged in as a society.
Absolutely. And it's something that's going to continue to be debated and discussed for years to come, I'm sure.
Yeah, well said. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. I think this was a really informative conversation.
I agree. It's been a pleasure.
All right, till next time, everyone.